This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NPPC's Brian Humphreys next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 560 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Agriculture groups are hopeful the House of Representatives can soon complete a new farm bill. Most commodity groups want to see long-term solutions to the remaining farm policy titles not covered in last year's budget reconciliation. Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council, says they want to see approval of a legislative solution to California's Proposition 12 animal welfare law.
Folks that are opposing us, they've got 10-second answers for 20-minute problems, and you got to spend some time going through these. They want to talk about states' rights. We agree this is a states' rights issue. The state of California should not be able to reach outside their jurisdiction and regulate farmers in other states. And when we sit down and we have conversations with members and their staff and read them Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution, we get on the same page pretty quick. When we sit down, we talk about food affordability and how this decision in California has increased food prices, pork prices in California by 20%. We get on the same page. We sit down, we talk about the folks that have made investments in Prop 12 are still concerned and worried about the potential for a patchwork without a fix. We get on the same page. And so I'm continuing to be confident the more conversations we have and the more we dig into this and members understand the real issues at hand, the more progress we make at bringing those folks along in the conversation.
As I understand, ranking member on the House Ag Committee, Angie Craig, is opposed to the Prop 12 language. And also the fact that one of the major packers is foreign owned.
Yeah, and we continue to hear this comment about foreign ownership and the impact there. And I find that argument to be, for lack of a better phrase, a bit ridiculous. What we're talking about are independent family farms here. What we're talking about is the broader U.S. pork industry and the impact that this can have here. And what we're talking about is the fact that a farm may have the financial capabilities to convert their barn one time to comply with a state like Prop 12 or like Massachusetts Q3, but they aren't going to be able to do it over and over and over again every time a state passes a new regulation. And what we're trying to do here is to protect not only the U.S. pork industry, but just as importantly, the American consumer from a patchwork that will have a massive impact here. To Angie Craig's office, Representative Angie Craig, we continue to have dialogue there and work with her office on addressing some of these concerns. But at the end of the day, this is something that the U.S. pork industry through the National Pork Producers Council, our delegate body, our board of directors, all producers have stood up and said that this is something we need to fix to. The U.S. pork industry is united that we cannot afford to have a patchwork out there creating problems for producers.
Let's start at the plate of the consumer. Consumer prices for food has been a big issue over the past several months. While you were in D.C., you were quoting recent information provided by Land-Grant University on how Prop 12 had impacted consumers in California.
You know, one of the things that North Dakota pointed out in there was that, as I mentioned, on average, prices for pork products are 20% higher due to Prop 12. And when you really dial that down, California consumers have paid more than $350 million more for pork products, while their consumption of pork products, Prop 12 compliant products, has declined. So let me say that again. A 20% increase. $350 million in additional costs for California consumers and a decrease in pork consumption. for folks looking at the election, for folks considering where they're going to land on all this, food affordability, food availability continues to be one of the most important issues facing this country for no other reason. If we want to set aside states' rights, we want to set aside all the other arguments that are in our favor, that in of itself is a massive number that we need to be discussing.
As I understand, the Prop 12 language showed a difference between fresh pork and cooked pork.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, and there's again to the discussion around the impacts of Prop 12, and favorite analogy. If I take raw bacon into the state of California, it has to be Prop 12 compliant. But if I cook it and bring it in, it doesn't have to be compliant. Right. And so when we look at this and we talk about hams and we talk about fresh cuts versus cooked cuts, we talk about sausage doesn't have to be compliant, but pork chops do if they're uncooked. These are things that, again, were designed to create challenges for the California consumer and the U.S. pork industry, not to address any specific concern or need.
So for the two states that have language dictating the way animals should be produced, has this caused a problem for the packing industry to keep animals separated for specific markets?
Oh, absolutely. I was meeting with a small packer yesterday, and discussion was about all the different lines of segregation they have to run through their facility and how they've had to make adjustments on when producers can bring their pigs and when they can't in order to keep those in line. So you've had massive disruptions to the entire supply chain here. So as an example, Jeff, if you raise pigs that are compliant with California, with Massachusetts question three, those same pigs are not qualified for California Prop 12. And so now the packer has to have one line running for Q3 or one line running for Prop 12, or they just pick one and go with that. And so now the producers who used to be able to bring in their pigs 5 days a week or 3 days a week now have to make adjustments for that so that the packing plant can work its way through one shift to track all that product through. Massive disruptions here.
Are there suggestions that other states are considering similar ballot initiatives or controls on the way animals are to be produced with meat sold in their state?
Oh, absolutely. We look at the state of New York. They've had legislation introduced very similar to Prop 12. There was language introduced and discussed in the state of Oklahoma. And neither of those matched exactly to California Prop 12. And to your question, this is why the U.S. pork industry is so worried and continues to talk about the need for a solution, because it's about the potential patchwork. Can we make adjustments here or there as an industry? Sure, we can. But when you start adding another state, and then a few years later, another state and another state, this patchwork is a real concern to the future of the business and of the industry and of the family farms. And so again, yes, we've seen it in Oklahoma. We've seen it in New York. We've seen things like IP28 in Oregon. There are other things coming down the pipeline here that we need to be cognizant of. And this is why we're calling on Congress to fix it.
If the House is successful in approving a farm bill this week, while you were in Washington, did you have any indication of what might be a path forward in the Senate, or if the Senate is going to attempt a farm bill?
Well, you know, we really appreciate everything that G.T. Thompson has done in the House to push this forward, and his constant willing to have the conversation and to continue to push forward with a farm bill. We sure look forward to having that same reception in the Senate as we move forward. And we continue to have conversations with Senator Bozeman and Senator Klobuchar and others about the need for a farm bill. And I think we'll get the same reception there, and I sure hope we do, but we'll continue to push on it. American agriculture has waited long enough for a farm bill. We've waited long enough for the certainty that comes with 12 titles that address the concerns of the American farmer. We have waited patiently as they have dealt with other issues and other challenges, and yes, we are grateful and appreciative of everything that was included in the one big beautiful bill, but that was not everything in a farm bill. And American agriculture deserves the certainty that comes with it. And I challenge anybody to say differently.
One of the issues in this 2026 is an election, and it was Senator Bozeman who pointed out there's not a lot of legislative days left in this calendar year.
100% correct, and all the more reason to get moving on the farm bill. All the more reason to put a draft in front of the Senate Ag Committee, and to start scheduling in time with Senator Thune and the rest of the Senate leadership to move this forward. And I'm not alone in this. President of the United States, President Trump, has called on Congress to pass a farm bill, and so I think it's expected from the administration and from agriculture that we move forward, even with the short days. That's going to need to be a priority.
From the swine industry perspective, what happens if the U.S., if the Congress fails to approve a new farm bill here in 2026? What suffers?
A number of things suffer. And obviously, we've talked a lot here about the Prop 12, but from a pork industry perspective, in Title II, we're talking about feral swine eradication programs, taking them from pilot to permanent. There's $150 million lined out in there for 5 years to tackle this. We're talking about foreign animal diseases. That's a huge issue for us. We talk about Title III on trade, you know, the one big beautiful bill allocated some money there. But this farm bill consolidates that and streamlines it in so we can work on foreign market development and market access programs. And that's a big deal as we work through some of these trade deals that the Trump administration has put together. And then I'd be remiss, I'm very proud of the work that this organization has done with several members of Congress and the Senate on the Beagle Brigade and codifying and expanding the language in the farm bill there that makes sure that we've got everything we need for more dogs and at more ports of entry. All great things included in the farm bill for the pork industry, in addition to the other titles on conservation and other things that need to be included for the rest of the ag groups.
Let's dive into some other pieces. The Swine Health Improvement Plan, U.S. SHIP, where is this located, and how important is this for the growth and the productivity of swine production in the nation?
Yeah, we're asking for $3 million there to be included and continue to work through that. Obviously, earlier this week, last week, the Secretary of Agriculture was asked about that during her hearing. And this is a big deal for us. We talk about the Swine Health Improvement Plan. For those of your listeners who may not be aware, this is let's call it a cooperative program between state and federal and the industry to plan to prepare and improve the health of the U.S. swine industry. And what does that mean? Today it's focused on things like African swine fever and classical swine fever, but really what it does for us is build a platform for standards and certifications with USDA and state vets at the table that allow us to prove to our trading partners that we continue to be free of these challenges, or in the event that we break with something like African swine fever, to be able to put the protocols in place to say, yep, here's all the testing requirements, and these sites are certified free of disease. Big project this industry has driven for the most part for the last several years by ourselves, and now in tremendous partnership with our state veterinarians and with USDA. And so getting that funded and getting that moving through USDA is a huge step in preparing for foreign animal diseases.
Does the concern of New World screwworm raise the issue of foreign animal disease to the point that swine can follow that movement?
Oh, without question. I'm intrigued at times when I talk to folks that aren't necessarily in the pork industry, that they're not always aware that the New World screwworm can and has and will impact the swine herd here. And so a big one for us, very, very pleased with the announcement of a $750 million investment in the new facility in Texas. And while we think, about 300 million sterile flies a week is great to get started, we're going to want to continue to improve on that. Jeff, if I could, though, New World screwworm is one significant challenge that we all need to be paying attention to given how close it is, and really appreciate the work of our partnership with the rest of the barnyard here, specifically our friends at NCBA, and obviously the great folks at USDA that have been working on this. But we talk about foreign animal diseases, African swine fever, we're all watching Spain. We're glad to see that Germany was able to clean up some efforts in Saxony after a 5-year process. But we're also seeing new strands of foot and mouth disease in China. My point with this is that when we talk about foreign animal diseases, New World screwworm, foot and mouth disease, African swine fever, the list goes on. This country and the livestock industries have to continue to remain vigilant in this approach with funding for things like the Swine Health Improvement Plan, the sterile fly vaccine, the sterile fly facilities. It needs to continue to be top of mind. And I do appreciate USDA's push on that. For the rest of the ag groups, it continues to be something hanging out there that we are ever concerned about.
Well, there's policy discussion and there's budget discussion, and budget pretty well rules the roost, if I can use the poultry analogy. The president has proposed significant cuts at USDA, and even the House version is smaller than the funds that we have here in FY26. Concerns?
Yeah, a couple there. But first, let's start off with the positives. The funding at APHIS, while we'd sure like to see an increase there, maintaining that budget line at about the $1.16 billion is tremendous. You know, but as we look across it was on your website and one of your stories, we're talking about a $675 million cut here that's going to have some impact. And part of that comes down to farm service agencies, conservation, et cetera. We've got to continue to recognize the impact of agriculture and the economic driver that it is, but the risks that come with things like foreign animal disease. And so we'll continue to encourage the House and the administration to prioritize the future and safety of American agriculture with not petting budget, but really digging in and figuring out how we can increase funding for some of these areas that are so important, like SHIP, like APHIS, and like other projects here.
Pork is popular in the U.S. with the American consumer, and oh yes, bacon. But there's also a lot of pork consumed in the rest of the world, a lot consumed by our neighbors in Canada and in Mexico. What's your message to Congress, to the administration, on USMCA?
Clean review from the U.S. pork industry and our friends in Canada and Mexico in the pork industry. Clean review. Let's keep moving ahead.
So obviously there is an attention here with the USMCA, but Brian, what about the rest of the world? Pork, the meat of choice for a number of countries. Are the doors open to U.S. meat and certainly U.S. pork around the globe?
100%, and really appreciate this administration's aggressive approach to open doors for U.S. products. A couple areas we look forward to seeing some advancement or movement on. One, let's talk about Vietnam. There's been some challenges with Vietnam over the years as it relates to offal and our ability to get those products in. To my knowledge, Vietnam is the only country in the world that delineates between white offal and red offal. And while they allow red offal in, we continue to struggle with non-tariff barriers to allowing white offal in, which would be a tremendous help for them in the challenges that their pork industry is facing. I'd love to see some progress made on that with the administration. And then the Philippines, been a tremendous market for us while they have unfortunately been struggling through African swine fever. And as they work on their recovery, we want to ensure our ability to continue to help feed the people of the Philippines. And with that, we really appreciate their effort to lower the MFN, or most favored nation, tariffs from 25% down to 15% for things that are in quota. But we need some certainty as we continue to build out those pipelines and get some of those things hammered out. And so looking forward to the administration's progress on both Vietnam and the Philippines as we move forward here.
Brian, one of the issues, whether it's the producer or whether it's the processor, is labor. Farm workforce has been a top issue for agriculture for decades. Mm-hmm. But yet in this short calendar, or rather this short congressional year, do you think there's a chance that this thing can make it to the Congress? And what happens the longer that Congress kicks the can on this mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah. I spend a good chunk of my time meeting with farmers or talking to farmers every day. And the number one question they ask about is, where are we at on Prop 12? And the number two question they ask me is about labor. And when we look at that, it is a constant reminder of the struggle that we face in rural America. And the fact that unemployment in some of the areas where we have farms or processing facilities is record low unemployment. And so the folks who we can't, finding local labor is simply not an option in some of these areas. Now to your question, the congressional calendar is short here. And when we talk about the need to get a farm bill done, and we talk about the need for some of the other must pass bills that have to go on this year, I think it's going to be a calendar struggle. But again, I always appreciate the opportunity to side with Chairman G.T. Thompson as the optimist that once we get through this farm bill, that's the time to start talking about labor and how do we address labor concerns in agriculture. And to your exact point, it's on the farm, but it's also further processing and packing plant processing that we need to address. And where are we going to find folks to keep the food supply moving and keep food affordable as we move forward? And I think there's a lot of support for it. We just got to get the bill out. We got to get folks on the same page to understand the challenge of moving ahead. But I'm the constant optimist here.
Are there regulatory measures that could be taken absent legislature that could help the situation?
In some instances, yes. And especially when we look at other sectors of the agricultural commodity, from the U.S. pork industry standpoint, when we talk about year-round H-2As as an example, because of the seasonality, we don't really qualify there. And so we need, from a U.S. pork industry perspective, are going to need legislation to really address the labor challenges that we face in rural America.
One of the other issues that regulatory action has been taken on, that of line speeds at pork processing plants. Has this been a positive, and what do you hope for moving forward?
Been tremendously positive. We are very appreciative of the administration's approach here. And for your listeners who may not be as familiar with it, they did a couple of things. One, they removed the max speed from which processing plants can operate. And they also removed some attestations that had to be done every year as part of reporting. And for us, in the pork industry, that's tremendous. It allows packing plants to prioritize worker safety and food safety, which is what the Federal Meat Inspection Act was originally about, is food safety. And it allows us to get on a better level playing field with the rest of the world. And some folks may not be aware of this, but there are many countries in Europe who don't have a max line speed for processing facilities. And so this new rule, when finally adopted, puts us on more of a commensurate and level playing field with several of the countries in Europe. And so very excited for that, but also outlines the need to continue to protect food safety as we move forward here. And so very excited for what's been done there and looking forward to seeing that one wrapped up here as soon as possible.
Well, Ron Humphreys, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Glad to see that you had success in Washington and have made it back to Iowa successfully. And certainly we do wish success for producers in this planting season and throughout the production season for hog farmers. Thanks for being here on this edition of Open Mic. Brian, it is Open Mic, and you've got the last word today.
I would like to use my last couple lines here to offer my condolences and the industry's condolences to the family and friends and team members of Representative David Scott. Appreciate all that he had done for American agriculture, and certainly offer our condolences there.
Our thanks to Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Chuck Nally.